Okay, tell them when you worked as head operator.
I was head operator on the combination crude cracking unit, which was thermal cracking, and it was cracking by heat and pressure, and had the crude unit, which was worked with the unit and part of the products from the crude unit went into the cracking unit, which would see further refining, and part of the straight run product went out the field. Straight run gasoline, gas oil, or commercially known as diesel, stove oil, kerosene, fuel oil. The fuel oil that was converted, used in the cracking unit to break it up further into cracked gasoline, and what they referred to side stream was cracked gas oil. Vacuum tower with a heavy wax of gas oil off of the top of the vacuum tower. Building. Heavy fuel from that went to the field for years and uses blended with cutter stock and used for fuel oil. And they later built a vacuum distillation unit which they then put the cracking unit heavy oil to the vacuum distillation unit, which took two different cuts of heavy gas oil off of that, which then went for feed towards the fluid cracking units, which had been built in the meantime. Bottom out those had to be blended with cracked gas oil to make it light enough to make fuel oil out of it. But as the years after the air pollution control department was formed, when the sulfur contact with this oil was too high to burn in such places as the Edison Company power plant. LA Power Bureau wide. So the market for that was kind of diminished. And they built a coker unit. This heavy oil into a coker unit. And it run the oil down the coke into a heavy gas oil, a different gas oil. In the meantime, they built a hydrocracker. The cracking unit, which uses hydrogen as catalyst. Back the product, and part of that coker product was part of the feed for the hydrocracker. This covers a period of years or so. So, starting from the days when they took crude oil and put it in a little so-called popping plant, took the gasoline off of it, and maybe some stove oil cuts and fuel oil. And you didn't the color very much of the oil that you actually, a great deal of it was left in the fuel oil. But as the years progressed, you got down to where about all that was left of it was the coke, the solid material. And it has been used in different companies, places in place of coal.
Yeah, what was your specific job as head operator?
Well, as head operator on the unit, you had to see that the unit was operating properly and be responsible for the crew to be doing their work properly and everybody being on. Responsible for the well-being of the crew and the safety of the unit and the crew.
How big a crew did you have on the combination plant?
There's 8 men and a head operator.
And what did those other 8 people do?
Well, it was 2 units, twin units, and there was 4 crewmen on each unit. And there was a head operator, assistant operator, an A helper, and a C helper. The operator is supposed to watch and control his unit, watch and see that the controls. And the assistant operator was a control board operator. He watched the control board to see that if everything was running and staying where it's supposed to be and all instruments were working to make the changes necessary to meet specifications. A helper looked this particular unit at what they call a hot pump room, where most of the hot pumps were in a enclosed section excepting one side which was open. And he was responsible for watching those pumps and the area around it. The C helper and the coal pump room was on the other side of the structure, and all the material was crude oil coming in and then like products going out that had been through the coolers and so forth and were headed for the field. He also once an hour was supposed to go to the towers and get pressure readings and some temperature as a double check against the instruments in on the control board to see it. They transmitted readings coincided with the instruments on the towers.
And how long did you stay as head operator on this unit?
Well, I was on this unit as head operator.
Did you become
shift foreman? You never did. Yes, I became shift foreman in 1948.
So you were never the head operator on a larger unit or anything?
I was never head operator on
any other unit.
On any other unit. I worked About 7 years. About 7 years as head operator.
Okay. Somehow we seem magically to have come up to 1948 without covering a lot of things that we should have in between. When you got married, you went to live in Concord. You said.
I was married what?
When you got married, you went to live in Concord.
Yes, after a year after I got married.
And that's the place that you lived in for a long time?
We lived there from about 19. '31 to 1962.
So you were there during the earthquake?
There during the earthquake.
And what happened to you during the earthquake? When you were home?
I was working the graveyard, the morning shift, the so-called 12 to 8 shift. When I got home, I usually went to bed in the morning and got up about 4 o'clock or so. Stayed up in the evening, but this day I figured I'd get the car grease, so I went to the service station, got the car greased, and took care of some other things, so it was about 1 or 1:30 time I got to bed that day. So when the earthquake hit, I was in bed. And after the main quake hit and the bed quit chasing, the dresser quit chasing each other across the bedroom, I was able to get out of bed. I heard my wife holler and couldn't figure out what was going on, so I was trying to get out, but it kept tossing me around. When I finally got out of bed, we had a breakfast room and I had a ironing board, and there wasn't very much clearance between the ironing board and the wall once he was on the outside. And he said she tried to come into the bedroom where I was, but she got caught between the end of that ironing board and the wall and bounced her back and forth, and she couldn't. She had a terrific big bruise on the side and her hip after it was over. Quite a painful time for a while. So we thought we really had a quake. We started around the house to see what happened. So I placed the flowers on the floor and some of the furniture wasn't where it was supposed to be. All our dishes were in the cupboard in the kitchen. We didn't have any. We were living in a rented house at the time. So we went out, a couple of doors were closed, so I wondered how they were. Dishes fared out, went to open the cupboard doors, and most of the dishes were leaning up against the door, so down on the floor it came, but wasn't broken. It got broken. Then my wife opened the cooler doors the houses used to have those days, that little built-in cooler. A jar of jelly fell on top of her head. So she got quite a bump on the head, plus the ironing board beat her. Outside of that, there wouldn't have been any injuries. Then, pretty soon, we heard somebody beating on the door. So we went to the door to see what was going on, because we were taking and straightening things up. The man was standing out on the sidewalk and said, "Are you guys going to see in there?" I said, "Yeah, why?" Well, I said, "Well, everybody else was out over here over in the vacant lot. We thought maybe something happened to you and you couldn't get out." So I went to work that night. Had a little difficulty getting there, but we didn't know whether the fellow was working and still there, what shape it was, so something better go out so they can go home, or maybe they needed help. Well, in fact, we all the crews were there. Big dark crew. But there was very little damage. And the refinery, the broken water line, a few oil lines, no fires that I knew of. But everything was down when we got there. So. The shakes continued throughout the night, for days afterwards. There was some damage all the whole night. Compton, of course, town. We lived about half a mile from the main part of town. We heard roar. Apparently, the two of them was the roar of the earthquake and the roar of the building falling all down. In fact, they were building in the main part of Compton at that time. It was completely demolished. In fact, we completely demolished. Of course, it was the main part then. It was only 2 blocks long. And they hadn't started building the supermarkets and whatnot out around town then. And these were all old Compton city buildings. A lot of them with false front put up on them, and those false fronts just crumbled down. People killed there on the spot, and then she died in the hospital after. So they had up north on Rosecrans at Avenue Track. They had an exhibition building up there. They had, used to have exhibits and every year, petroleum companies that put on exhibits and whatnot. It was pretty fairly good size, one-story building. A lot of the stores and whatnot around set up their stores, and that was the town of Compton for a while.
Rosecrans and what?
See, it's off PE Tracks on the back. No, PE Tracks. West side of PE Track. And the Red Cross set up kitchens for people to go to. Got so there was coming so many coming from outlying areas that the people in Compton live there had a hard time getting meals. Very little damage to our place. We didn't have any. We had water. We didn't have any gas after it turned back on. So we had enough electrical plants and whatnot to leave. And we had a little grocery store around the corner that was open. So we managed to eat at home without going down to the Red Cross.
Yeah,
but, so you used electricity to get
your food
hot. Right. A lot of people that didn't want to go to the Red Cross or whatever didn't have any way to heat their food. They had to go there for at least coffee or something.
Yeah,
well, someone went there regardless. We had a number in our neighborhood that went every day. They had the same facilities we did. But we just don't stay home and not go wait in line or. That we figured there was a lot of people that needed worse than we did. Everybody went there, which as time went by, more and more people came. Got to be quite a hassle down there before they got through with it.
The same thing you talked before about looking at some of the buildings in Compton after the earthquake and what they looked like.
Well, all of them were the front, were far away. My uncle had a building there that had a bakery in it, and just the top just collapsed. What fell off from the building just collapsed. There wasn't anything left to it. The roof came down, the whole building. And a Stockwell building, which is at a grocery store underneath, and a dentist's office, a few offices upstairs. And it had an open front with 6-inch steel pipe set around, and they had the mover type shut off, you know, kind of get pulled together, accordion type closures, and they'd open that wide open, the door would be open, and it just dipped out on the street like it was on stilts, the upper story just piled out on the street, and the report that there was a Dr. Perkins upstairs, and he was working on a patient, just landed out in the middle, and the woman walked, and the lady patient walked out of the debris, and Perkins was killed. The doctor was killed. There was a number of freak things like that. Heard about.
Yeah. What about the Masonic building? The place where your Masonic hall
is? Well, the whole, it's two stories. The post office was downstairs, and the front and part of one side was windows, glass windows and doors and whatnot. And brick, and that truck all fell out, and the brick wall was cracked and moved around enough that it had to be torn down. And it was a new building that was first occupied in 1928, so it only lasted 5 years.
Did people like the Masons have insurance, or did they just have to pick up the bill for the whole thing, for fixing it?
No, they didn't have, very few people, if any, had earthquake insurance. The only thing is, if it fell down and burned, you could get flecked on the fire insurance. But if it didn't burn, a lot of people thought they had earthquake insurance, but they didn't. Most people, the premium was so high for earthquake insurance. Okay.
How long was it before they started up the plant again?
Oh, I don't remember for sure that I was working on. I think we were down about a week. There wasn't much damage to it, but they had to get lines, different lines, new lines in, and everything checked over and start up. But I really don't remember for sure this time. I know we weren't down very long.
When did you first join the Masons? We talked about going to.
In 1928.
Under what circumstances?
How do you mean, under what circumstances?
Well, why did you join?
Well, because I had the many friends and relatives, and the reason I joined in Compton at that time was because of friends I had there, and relatives I had. My uncle, Ollie Burris, who was one of the early farmers in Compton, was the master in 1913 of the lodge. And one of the fellows I worked with, a good friend of mine, he was master in 1926. And another was master the year I became a Mason. doctrine. So they said, I jinxed the place because that's the first third degree in the new temple. And that's why I went in there, and that's the reason.
That isn't the reason it fell down the earthquake, though.
That's Psalm 7, that's the reason. I jinxed it. So that's, a good many of the farmers in the Linwood, Compton area, surrounding area, belong to Anchor Lodge there. It's one of the older lodges. It's 96 years old now. So that used to be a night out for all those farmers to go to lodge and something looking forward to them.
And did they build it back after the earthquake? In the same place?
No, they built it in another area of property. They sold those lots. And,
did they own that other building with the post office in it?
Right. And, and they built a new one. The members all worked for it. Back when all was built by members, that was about 10 years later.
What did they need in the meantime?
In the Odd Fellows. They got it. The Odd Fellows built there. All by the Sonic Lodge took a 10-year lease on it. That's, the Odd Fellows wanted that to have one level there, based on, so we stayed there for the 10 years. Meantime, towards the end of that period, we built the other one. We did.
Did you belong to any other lodges or anything like that?
Oh, you mean to the higher orders, like?
No, I mean to the Elks or the anything like that.
No, belonged to Science for several years.
But that's part of.
Yeah.
What part of the Masons is that down here?
It's just a social, some of the business. And it was a Long Beach order, and they had a drill team, a meeting once a month. And
were you on the drill team?
No, I was never on the drill team. But and they had entertainment at their meeting once a month. It was just a social group.
Okay, you talked about how the refinery changed, how the units changed. But what about outside events? What happened during World War II, for example? I mean, did that accelerate development or accelerate change, or did it get bigger? Or?
Well, they built the what they call a 7-4 catalytic cracking unit, and it was a unit that Standard Oil had the patent rights and whatnot. Right now I don't know what Standard it was. Standard in the US, but anyway, for the duration of the war, they let any company that wanted to build this, they didn't have to pay any royalties as long as the war continued. The main reason it was built to, when the government found out that they had to have more petroleum products to run their mechanized military, well, they started working towards that point. The first several years of the war, why oil companies didn't have any priority on mineral material. Apparently considered not really an essential industry. But they started getting a lot of equipment more than they had fuel for, so that built and put in operation during the war, World War II. And after the war was over, they had the option of buying it or shutting it down. And so Richfield purchased it. Richfield Oil Corporation.
Did Richfield make a lot of aviation gasoline or something like this at the beginning of the war when the United States first got involved?
Richfield got a plaque or whatever you want to call it from the general of the procurement division of the United States Army military. I'm not sure just what his title was, but it's a state plaque. For making the most aviation gasoline per barrel of crude oil throughput of any refinery in the United States. They didn't make the most aviation gasoline, but the most aviation per amount of oil charged to the units. Of course, they specialized in aviation gasoline, racing fuel, and things like that before World War II. Companies like oil companies, regardless of what effort, they couldn't get that E flag that companies for the war effort, they had a special flag and had a big E. The companies probably issued that for theirs because you had your production had to be entirely for the military, for the war effort. So where you had both commercial and military, you couldn't win the conversion. The E flag, but they got this ward.
Did many people who worked in the crews and stuff leave to go in the army, or?
There wasn't so many at Richfield because, like, Shell was finally across the street. Not more did because during Depression days in the more like things were tight. Shell used to fill up everything, shut down, and hire in new help, younger help. And Richfield held more of the old hand and all. And they had a higher age limit, average, than a good many companies around. So the draft didn't affect. And what the younger ones were, they were all family men, but the draft didn't take to start with. And so we didn't lose as many. We lost more people to the shipyards.
Because they could make more money?
They could make a lot more money. They work more days, make more money. And the oil workers union had made an agreement that they wouldn't strike during the war. So we got a whole big 3-5 cent an hour raise for the whole duration of the war. Cost of living raise is 3-5 cents an hour. Where other companies were doubling the pay of their employees, like aircraft, they about tripled their pay on a lot of jobs in the aircraft in the same period of time. We were making more than the aircraft people started the war, but they was all making more. We were at the end of the war.
Do you think that fact contributed to the 1948 strike?
No, I don't think so.
Because by 1948 you were all getting less money than...
No, it never... I don't remember really comparing the other too much. But outside of our scales, was down where we used to be, among the higher paid. We weren't anymore.
Well, tell what happened to you during the 1948 strike.
Well, the exempt employees plus some other non-union employees. We run for everything was shut down. It stayed down for about a month. Then they decided to start the units up. They started it up with the supervisory and manager employees and some lab and office help that belonged to the union and whatnot. And we run it. Everybody worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for about 6 weeks. So the strike was finally settled.
Tell about the first night you stayed at the plant.
This night stayed at the plant. Well, you mean about the people that were sleeping in the county office? Everybody wanted near the windows, and they all got their beds over near the windows. Night, why threw a lot of rocks through the windows and the glass scattered all over, and everybody had their bed moved in there as opposite the hall as they could. But then I didn't stay in there long. I was a little nervous because I was the only one out of the yard that was in there with all these office people, accountants and whatnot. I went out into the yard.
And how long have you been a monthly employee when the strike started?
About 6 months. A lot of people didn't know that I was, thought I was still union, so it made it a little bit rougher for me than it would have otherwise.
Okay. Your daughter was born in Wisconsin?
Yes, she was born in Lost and Paris Hospital in Compton Boulevard and Wilmington Avenue.
And she go to school in Compton?
She went from the grammar school through the junior college in Compton. And finished, got her teacher's credentials at Long Beach State. Which is not Long Beach.
Well, whatever.
University in California.
What kind of things did you do for recreation while you lived in Compton? Besides go to the Masonic Hall with the farmers.
Well, we used to make quite a few local trips, country. And for so we just played tennis. We used to go swimming a lot. We used to go down the beach. We used to go down Cerritos Avenue, which was 2 lanes wide most of the way. Now they call it Lakewood Boulevard.
And you need to swim in the breakers?
The other down at the bay, down to Alameda's Bay and Recreation Lagoon. I was in the surf. Used to go football games, some baseball games up at Angel's Ballpark on Avalon.
Do you remember when they started building the harbor and all that stuff, so you couldn't swim in the breakers anymore?
Oh, I would do doing much swimming at the time. They put that outer breakwater clear across there where they really killed the surf. That's when they really killed the surf, was when they put that. I don't know what year that was.
You just were able to do it all day.
That wasn't, apparently that isn't. That was after they put Rainbow Pier in first, and then they put that breakwater. After they put that in, the sand started to pile up on the Rainbow Pier. I don't know. I wouldn't even say that for sure.
How come you moved out of Concord?
Well, because when we moved out of Dalton, there was only two other white couples on our side of the street. And on the other side, there were several more. But some of those were quite elderly people that probably would never move. And when you go downtown, why? Nobody left around. You hardly ever see anybody you know in a town where you knew so many people that when you went downtown, you couldn't hardly get back home. It was busy. And just didn't fit in with the elements, so.
What was your... You said in 1933 you were renting that house. Did you buy the house or did you live someplace else?
No, moved to another house.
Where was the one you were living in 1933?
It was on Palmer Avenue in Aranby. It was about halfway between Wilmington Avenue and Pacific Electric Track.
And where is the one that you subsequently bought?
That's the one. That's wrong. Race. I lived at the time of the earthquake, blocked and a half west of Wilmington Avenue, and of course on Magnolia, the first street north of Compton Boulevard. And the hospital was on the corner of Compton Boulevard and Wilmington Avenue. So I lived about a block and a half from the hospital. There was supposed to be commercial property behind us on the Compton Boulevard, so the lots were vacant. We were setting a couple of days later when the shakes were still coming, one of the X.B. Hardman hit, sitting in the breakfast nook where the window looked out over the backyard in the vacant lot. You could see the ground waving when it went by a couple of days later when the harder after shocks hit. Then we moved from there working Palmer just off of Aranby, which is halfway between Willowbrook Avenue and Pacific Electric Tracks and Wilmington Avenue, the west side of town.
Do you remember when the Sears and Roebuck store was building concrete on the